The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels and cars so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. I'm Di Stewart and welcome to Why Golf, presented by Skyscanner. I am so happy to be here at Woburn for the G4D Open, the major championship for golfers with disabilities. I've just had the most incredible chat, so inspirational, with Joachim Bjorkman. He's won 35 times. He is a world champion and he's really overcome adversity. I'm sure you'll be inspired by this chat. We've also had the opportunity to chat to those who have worked really hard behind the scenes to get this event going. I hope you enjoy this one. Enjoy listening. Delighted to be sat here in the clubhouse here at Woburn with a gentleman who's won 35 times on tour. You've won national, European, you're a world champion. Joachim Bjorkman, great to have you here. It's the second edition of the G4D Open here at Woburn. I love Woburn. What do you make of Woburn?
It's a very classic arena. Very,
it's not like, easy, is it?
Aesthetic, very clean and very like, you see the lines very, very easy. So yeah, it's a very, very cool venue.
How many events have you played so far this year?
This is actually my first.
Yeah.
I have been on a life journey the last couple of months, actually, but even bigger the last couple of years. But the last part has been like more life changing.
What does that life journey involve? What have you been doing?
I've struggled with the technical part in the swing because I have freezing over the ball. So I can't like take the club back. So that have been the big part of it, and then that have been stuck with me for, yeah, it still is, but you know, the last 3 years.
Can you just explain that a bit further? So what exactly happens when you stood over the ball?
The head just blocking your mind. You can't move.
Right.
When you're like addressing the ball.
Yeah.
And you're stuck there. You can't move. You can't take a little piece of like a movement.
Right.
So I can stand there for like, in the beginning, it was like, 3 to 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
When did this start?
The first time was in Florida at a mini tour event 3 years ago. So I remember the warming up was okay.
Yeah.
The first tee shot was, but the second one, wow. I couldn't move. I was just standing there right in the middle of fairway. It felt like 5 minutes.
Yeah, felt like a long time.
Yeah.
I can't imagine like the emotions that you were going through when you were stood over the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you remember what you were thinking?
I just want to get out of here.
Yeah. Escape, run away.
It doesn't care if the ball moves 1 inch or like a couple of yards. I just want to have a movement so you can take the next step.
Yeah.
And next one. So that was my mind at that moment.
And have you spoken? You've spoken to people about this. Do you know anyone that's experienced this?
Yeah. I mean, we have another Swedish professional golfer, Robert Karlsson, who had the same thing.
Mm.
And I've been in touch with him and told him what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we have the exactly same way, the same exactly freezing movement. So it was still there.
Yeah.
So actually, I came to a point in December now. I mean, it was a lot of things who like comes to a point there. You have to do something right
now.
Yeah. And that includes the technical part and life in general.
I think this is fascinating because I think a lot of people listening to this will have possibly experienced something similar, whether it's in the field of golf, the arena of golf, or whether in life.
Yeah.
It's a behavior that happens because of it's coming from somewhere. Is it coming from a place of possible fear or just the unknown future ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Have you sort of dissected that?
So January 4th, I got in contact with Torsten Hansson, who is a mental coach for Henrik Stenson.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually first in contact with Henrik himself, and then him referred me to Torsten. So we have worked now from 4th of January.
4th of January with Torsten.
Yeah. From that moment, the first FaceTime call we had, he gave me assignment, like small assignment. Okay, first of all, you need to have a notebook and a pen. So when you have that, you call me next week.
And what were you writing down in the notebook?
Everything he said, everything that I need to remember.
I'm so fascinated. What did you have to remember?
Yeah, I mean, it still is.
Okay, it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, so we came to a point we need to structure a process. So first of all, it's the physical part, it's the mental part, it's the strategic part, it's the socially part,
yeah,
and the health.
Break it down.
Yeah, these five. So when you do the physical part, your mental health will be better.
Mm-hmm.
When the mental health is better, the strategic part will be better. So you see the red line here.
Yeah.
So when the strategic part is good, your social life will be better.
Yeah.
And the last one is your health will be so much better.
Uh-huh.
So
Do you know, your face is lit up when you're talking about it, because you can see the pattern, can't you? And how everything has a ripple effect.
Yeah. When I see it now, it's like, wow. It's sometimes it's like shaking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some people it makes, that's my easy words or easy subjects, but it's very hard to get through it and understand it.
So how are you feeling right now about golf? So 4th of January has been a journey over the last few months. Yeah. We're now, beginning of May. Do you feel like you will feel different on the golf course this week?
I think so, but it's a very long way left. Yeah. So I'm not sitting down and feel like, okay, I'm done here.
The box tick, done. Yeah,
no. It's like it's very much like a live document.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to keep it up every day. But for this week, I will get into this tournament with a totally different mind. Different health, the body feels good, and then we will see on the course how the technical part will do.
I think it's really inspirational to everybody listening that you have to put in, it's a process. Yeah. You have to put in a lot of hard work and management of your lifestyle to get to a certain point, and it's not a smooth journey.
No,
and there's a lot of digging deep, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's discipline.
Yeah.
And that's what I see now, what I have been missing. Because before I was like jumping head first and see what happens. I seek those moments where it happens, and I want to be in the moments where the big guys are. So right there I was jumping head first and see what happens, because that's the way I did it before. I was jumping in every possible situation, just to see what happens.
Yeah.
Just to see the reactions of people and that. But it was never a thought behind it.
Right.
It was never a reason. And it felt like when you have done that, it was like so empty. It was like, what to do next?
Can you give us an example of jumping into a situation?
I mean, I want to create a reaction, especially when I'm on the golf course. Where is the big crowd? okay, I'm going in here. You just do.
Just for that moment of a high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like kept me alive to when that people's reaction get back to me. It was like a receipt of like, okay, you're doing pretty good. But it was just only that.
Short-lived.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. It felt so empty when I've just done that. Mm. And it was like, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
So, and then I seek into the next big crowd.
Mm.
So, I think it was like just to feel something, to feel, that was a way for me to get heard or get responded or get, or like receiving feedback or something. So that was the way for me to get something, to feel something.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because I think it could definitely help a lot of people listening. When you're stood over the ball at the moment, what's it like?
It's still a fight.
Yeah.
But I have some clues now to get rid of that.
Yeah.
I understand everything so much better now.
Oh, that's amazing.
So right now it's just for me to go in there and take charge of your mind. I mean, that's the whole thing we do of the five process. I have a little circle on my board at home. It's like the whole thing about why we're doing this is to take charge of your mind. So be
kind to your mind as well.
Yeah. I mean, you need to put yourself on the first line, to make your own decisions or what you're doing or own the situation. So that's what I feel about the technical part and the swing part.
Yeah.
So I need to just take charge and just go for it.
Definitely. Oh my goodness. Go for it this week. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing what you're doing. And stick to the process. Uh-huh. Yeah, I love that. Working with your mind, not against it, because often when we resist things, then they persist.
Yeah.
But it's allowing that resistance to be there and accepting it.
Yeah.
And accepting this is the position I'm in right now.
Yeah.
And this is how I'm going to grow. Because it's so easy to just get frustrated and then the body will seize up even more.
Yeah.
So we can't wait to see that journey progress, and you're doing it brilliantly. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's so like heartwarming. It's like you're feeling like warm and like cozy in some way. But I mean, I just feel I'm on the right track.
I want to take you back to when you first started golf. How old are you now?
33.
I love it. We all forget our age. I'd like to forget my age, actually, many times.
I used to like go with the year.
Yeah.
Like 90, born 90. Okay.
Oh, okay. There
That's
we go.
It. Yeah.
So you're 30. When's your birthday?
July 6th.
Oh, it's coming up. Happy 34th. And when did you start playing golf?
When I was 12, summer 2002. Because 2 years before, I watched at home when Tiger won the Open with 15 shots at St. Andrews. So
the 15?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the same mind when I get into golf. I want to win everything I'm in. I want to like win with 15, 20, 30 shots.
Really?
Yeah. So that was my mind to like crush the
field.
Yeah, and everyone else and crush the expectation of what people think and everything. So that was the way for me to like be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, what's your biggest victory, biggest margin been? Can you remember something like Tiger 15 shots?
European Championship in 06 was like 11.
Oh,
I think I was six back and took that six and won by 11.
Stop it.
So that
felt pretty
that
good.
That is one I can remember now. I think it had been like 8, 5, 6, 7, 10, sometimes.
Oh, I love it. I wish I could say that. No.
So I got that in my mind when Tiger won.
Yeah.
And then I saw an ad spring 2002. So I was like raising up my hand and I was like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
So I signed up on that. So it was a camp for 1 week or 2 weeks. So from scratch, from that week, I think it was week 32, 2002, it took me 4 months to get 15 in handicap.
Really? I did read a quote that your mum or your dad would drop you off at the golf club early in the morning and pick you up at, what, 10 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
So you were just there hitting balls all day?
Yeah, I mean, short game.
Short game?
Yeah, mostly.
Nick Faldo did the same. Yeah. He was dropped off with cheese and pickle sandwiches. What sandwiches did you eat?
Nothing.
Nothing? Come
just,
on.
Just water.
No, stop.
Yeah, that's true.
Serious?
Yeah. Maybe some fruit.
Maybe. Okay. I love clean living.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they drop off like 7 or 8 in the morning before they go to work.
Yeah.
So this time was like in summer holiday. So I got like 9 or 10 weeks of holiday, so every day they drop me off at like 7 or 8 in the morning, and they should pick me up at like 6, but often they forgot me.
It's what parents do.
So I in that moment I had no phone. I mean, back then I had nothing. So I was okay. I was shipping and putting around here until they come.
That's awesome.
I mean, if we take it further back in life, I mean, the golf course was my free zone of everything. It was to like when you get there, you can like relax and disconnect everything what's happening in the world. I didn't
pure
mind that.
Escapism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was exactly what I felt when my parents like, well, it was late. It was like, you can come back tomorrow. I will find a chair or something to sleep. I mean, it was like that.
That's so brilliant. Amazing.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your disability? And when you were aware of something?
I have a disability of short stature, and my diagnosis is achondroplasia. That comes with birth. So I got this diagnosis right away, but I didn't realize that until, I don't know, like preschool, when you are like 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah.
When you got friends and classmates and everything. And,
mm-hmm.
and then I start to realize why everyone is watching me. It's like, why? It's like from every corner.
Right.
So that was like a scratching moment in my head. It was like, why? So it was like that every day. And then I like asked my mother. It was like, well, why people like, why are them staring at me or watching me? So there I come down to earth, and I was like, and she told me, you have a short stature and achondroplasia, and you are gonna be like this.
And how did you react to that at such a young age?
Confusing. It was like very much of trying to understand, but I couldn't get there. So every eyes I got, it was like I storage in my body, in my mind, just to keep it in myself. And you got that, I mean, every day and every second. So it's a very, very, very much a process. But that was a way for me to like swallow it and just go through.
That's really, really interesting, because our cells have memories, don't they? So, you know, from such young, you will have remembered all those looks that you had at school and all those times when you felt... Did you feel that you weren't part of the big school environment, or did you feel integrated? Do you have lots of friends?
I did. So that's when I'm thinking about it now. I mean, I was very fortunate to have that so much close friends.
Support.
But when you were outside that, and when you were with the like strange people or another people, I don't know, it was like very hard situations. So I mean, I kept those eyes every day. So I hold that for like 10, 11 years until I got a panic attack when I was 17.
Just out of nowhere.
Yeah, because of all of this,
like, trapped emotion.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the storage memory was full.
You
say that.
Yeah, it was going to
so,
go.
So the body reacts that way. So I remember I was walking from my room at home to the kitchen, and when I just come around the corner to the kitchen, I just my eyes was went black, and I fell down and start shaking.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all the emotions and reaction I got for like 10, 11 years.
What happened after that?
So they took me to the emergency.
Yeah.
I was still shaking. And then the day after, I was so empty. So when my parents come in again, I was like, who are you? I didn't even recognize them. My parents.
Right.
I was so drained and so empty. I didn't feel anything. You didn't feel it was like light or dark, hot and cold. It was so much. You are so empty. So, I mean, a couple of days, it was like, okay, when you're feeling this way now, you have a chance to restart your life. It's like to being reborn in a older age, a bit wiser. So I took that opportunity to understand, to plan or organize why people staring, why people comment, why people do stuff. Also in my mind, I was like two or three steps further than anyone else.
Yeah.
So I was like seeing the future, what's going to happen in a few seconds. So I was already there. So that kept me alive to like manage all the situations.
Yeah.
So what happens if I stand here in these positions? Where would the eyes be when they could direct to me? So I was like, I have a third person beside me all the times who planned all this.
Yeah.
It may like... sounds
no it doesn't
crazy,
but if you've computed in your head everyone looking at you for so many years then you can foresee what they're, where they're going to look.
I get it so
yeah.
so that was my
it's your superpower,
I guess.
Yeah,
so that kept me alive and still is. So today it's no problem.
Honestly, Joachim, I am literally feeling really emotional. I'm like totally blown away by your story. It's amazing. And I think it's so inspirational for, you know, I've got two children at school. Sometimes they come home and they've had some tough words with, you know, friends. And it's really difficult as a parent to be able to comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But what advice would you give to anyone out there in the business world, in the sporting world, or in a school environment where you're seen as possibly not part of a group or not part of something that's cool? What would you say?
I mean, that's
everyone's on their own journey, aren't they?
Yeah, that was exactly what I'm thinking of. You need to trust yourself and go what you think is best for you. I mean, if you, I mean, we have talked with my mental coach Torsten about this. You need to trust your journey and believe that's right for you.
Yeah.
And not be like, because someone else going in another direction or a group of people going in that direction, that doesn't need to be a direction for you.
Yeah.
So you need to resist that and believe what's best for you. So on my head cover, it says in Swedish, but it's...
you have to translate it. I'm not very good at Swedish.
No. I will.
Yeah.
It's the resist the pack animals. We humans are like, how would I say, not animals, but kind of an
animal. We follow the herd, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Resist the herd, you can say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So stand in your own power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I have on my driver head cover in Swedish.
That's so cool.
So that's when he explained that to me. But when you feel like, okay, but now I'm alone and feeling unsure and seeing what other people do. So that's like a hard part to get through, and like trusting that your side will be best.
Trust, find that inner trust. Yeah.
So resist the hurt.
I am so in awe of your story, because I mean, I play golf, but to stand over a golf ball and not be able to move the club back is huge. But as you say, there's a story behind it and there's a reason behind it.
Yeah.
And this community, I'm hoping this community here, do you have friends on tour? Do you feel supported by everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing with golf with disability for like, right after I started to play golf, I played my first disability tournament at home in Sweden the year after.
Right.
So 2003, I played my first event.
Awesome.
So now it's like, I don't know how many years.
21. Just 21. Yeah.
20 plus. So the whole community from when I started back when I was like 14, 15 and we got our European Championship was at that time was so big. And in Sweden, we got our national tour.
Yeah.
With like four or five events. And EDGA have their own around Europe.
Yeah.
So that's what we had at that time in the mid 2000s to see what we are doing now. Mm-hmm. It's like pretty crazy. But I always had that in my mind to push the limit. I want us to be out there with the best guys.
Yeah.
I mean, even at 05, 06, 07 there, I wanted to have a world championship. I want to have a like almost a professional tour back then to create the pathway for people who wants to go that path.
Mm.
When you go in that path, you create some idols on the way who can grow the game after as well.
Yeah.
So that's what we actually need to have some Brandon, to have some like Kip, to have some, I mean, in every different disability, to have that, to be that star they are.
Yeah.
Mm. And that way we'll create a couple of golfers after them as well.
Mm.
So that's what I believe is the most effective and the best way to go.
Role models.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you see it, you can be it, can't you?
Yeah.
This episode of Why Golf is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels, and rental cars, so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Now, I end up traveling around the world quite a bit for golf, whether that's leisure to play at that special course or when I'm working. But travel planning can feel overwhelming and pretty stressful. There are so many options for flights, hotels, and cars. Which one is best for me? What is a great deal? Am I missing out on a great option? Right, okay, breathe. This is where Skyscanner comes in, making everything simple and easy. Skyscanner has been helping travelers for over 20 years, and because they are fellow travelers, they never pressure you to book or manipulate prices. And tools like Explore Everywhere or the new Savvy Search AI feature help you explore and find that perfect trip when you don't know where you want to go. I used them recently when I was looking to book a trip to Germany and was amazed with how quick and easy it was. I went to skyscanner.net, searched for my dates and airports, and found exactly what I was looking for with times and prices. And it was also easy to add hotel and car options to my trip too. So when you're booking your next adventure, whether that be to Augusta or Abu Dhabi, St Andrews or Spain, just head to skyscanner.net or download the Skyscanner app to start building your next dream trip away. Amazing deals for flights, hotels and car hire all in one place with one simple search. Skyscanner, proud partner of the Why Golf podcast.
Hello, Why Golf listeners. Emma Saunders here. If you're enjoying the latest episode, then you should also check out On Tour with Sport 24. Each week, I'm joined by my trusty TikToking travelling companion, Rob Adcock, as we explore sporting cities across the world. So whether you're looking for the best way to enjoy the Las Vegas Grand Prix, make the most of your day at Wimbledon, or find out about the history of some of the world's biggest football clubs like Real Madrid, this is the podcast for you. So listen to On Tour with Sport 24 via your favourite podcast provider.
We will be back with Joachim in just a minute because we do need to ask him his clubhouse curveballs, but let's go and see who else we can find. Tony Bennett, president of Edgar, great to see you here at Woburn. Tony, can you first of all give us an overview of Edgar and what you guys do?
Yeah, Edgar started in 2000, formed in Wiesbaden, and it's just an association of people that had an interest for golfers with disability. And so that's sort of how it started, and there was lots of people that were doing kind of different things, and they were kind of doing their own thing. And so when you try, almost like different churches.
Yes.
And when they're in their own church, they were fine. But then when you tried to bring them together, they were all playing with different rules. Some were playing with different handicaps. Some were what they call bumping the ball. So in other words, nudging the ball on the fairway, preferred lies. Some were playing different kinds of formats. And so it was really difficult to bring them all together, different countries. And so that's what Edgar was formed to try and do and say, oh, okay, let's try and create some kind of level playing field. Yeah. And in some countries, you know, one disability was recognised, other countries it wasn't. And these were all kind of different organisations with no commonality. Yeah. So that's what Edgar did. Yeah, they kind of bumbled along until 2013. And at that stage, they had like 400 golfers that were competitive golfers. And it was all considered a bit sort of rehabilitation and medical, a bit kind of a health sport rather than being a sport. So it was about getting people back into society and getting them to play a little bit. And that's what it was mainly about. And so today, if you fast forward to where we are today, it's a tenfold increase in competitive players. We've got about 4,000 competitive players, probably around 30,000 disabled golfers that are playing.
Great.
39 national federations that are members. We advise 51 national federations.
Wow.
All the major organisations.
That's huge. As,
yeah, it is, yeah. It is R&A. We advise them for things like this event, DP World Tour for the G4D Tour events, USGA for their eligibility. So we do all that eligibility stuff. This isn't possible really without the eligibility stuff that Edgar does, without some of the comms stuff that we do, without some of the advice that we give. Neither is the DP World Tour. Sorry, I should say the G4D Tour by the DP World Tour. And many of the other things that happen. So yeah, that's kind of what we do. That's a short version.
Wow, well, it sounds like you're incredibly busy. I was going to ask what you do this week with the DP World Tour and the RNA who are running this event, but I kind of pretty much know, you know, you're integral and you're advising them.
Yeah, we started this, I don't remember now, probably 5 or 6 years ago, and we started the conversation with the RNA about, you've got a Women's Open, you've got the Open Championship, obviously, you've got a Women's Open,
yeah.
You've got a Seniors Open, you've got a Junior Open. So really, you should be having something for golfers with disabilities. So you should be having a G4D Open. So that's kind of when the conversation started, and then COVID gets in the way.
Yeah.
But then it's a question of, well, you know, let's find the right Tampa golf course. So we start, I mean, before anybody really knew, we were looking at golf courses and saying, well, you know, what is the type of golf course we need? So you come here to Woburn, you've got three great golf courses. But the Duchess is ideal because of the length and because the fact that I think I'm right in saying we've got 27 bunkers on this golf course. And you go to a golf course where you've got 360 bunkers or something, it's much more difficult for players that have got mobility issues.
Yeah.
And the team here have been incredible because they've now made all those slightly inaccessible bunkers accessible.
Brilliant.
So I don't know if you've seen or if you've had the opportunity to get out there, but if you can do, you really should have a look at some of those bunkers because they've made some kind of temporary ramps to go in there. We did that last year. I'll not say we, Woburn did it, we advise. But they figured out a way to be able to do it in a way that it can be done for this week.
Oh, that's excellent.
And then
it
can be taken away.
You've spoken about golf being integrated sport rather than an adaptive or parallel version. Can you explain?
We play the mainstream sport, so it's an inclusive sport. So everybody can play. It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you come from, they can play. The golf club doesn't know who's swinging it, but the golf industry does. And so the golf industry sometimes needs to take a look at itself and say, okay, are we stopping people playing the game? The game doesn't. The game, basically, you take a stick, hit a ball to a target. That's basically it. You can do it alone, you can do it with friends, but that means that we're playing a sport that anybody can play.
Yeah.
It's an inclusive sport because of that. Now, occasionally we'll play a modified inclusive sport. And the interesting part to this is that this week you've got people playing in an inclusive sport. So in other words, nothing's different.
Yeah.
Exactly as you and I would play.
Great.
You've got some players that are playing a modified inclusive sport because, for example, the visually impaired players, they're allowed to have somebody behind them to line them up, which is a pretty good idea with visually impaired players to make sure that they're pointing the right direction. So they've got a modification to the rule that allows them to do that. So
got you.
Then you've got other kinds of sports. So you've got parallel sports, in other words, para sport. So that is often a sport that's similar to the mainstream sport, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
So you might think of wheelchair rugby.
Yeah.
It's not rugby. It's a different version, but it is rugby, but it's not the same. It's a parallel version to it. Wheelchair tennis would be a similar thing. It's not tennis, but it's sort of the same thing. And then you've got what they would call an adaptive sport. So we now adapt the sport to be able for people with disability to be able to play. So in other words, you might think an adaption might be, well, what we'll do is we'll make the hole bigger.
Right.
But we don't do that.
No.
So we don't play an adaptive sport. And we don't play a discrete sport, which is something that is just for people with disability and nobody else can take part in it. So we do play an inclusive sport.
Yeah.
And so it's terminology.
It is terminology, messaging. Which we need to use. We need to understand. We need to learn about.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
great.
Look, I don't think anybody cares here, to be honest. And the guys and the girls are great because, look, you know, if you say something that's slightly offbeat, if it comes from the head,
yes,
yeah, it's kind of like made a miscalculation. They're kind of all right with that.
Yeah,
you know, I thought this was going to be the right thing. I made a mistake. They're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a mistake from the heart, where we're trying to do something wrong, then they're very unforgiving about that. So, terminology. If we say the wrong thing to somebody, then you just put your hands up and you kind of apologise and say, "Oops, I'll learn and I'll get it right next time."
Absolutely. I think you're doing an absolutely tremendous job. I just wonder how many different categories you have this week in this major championship.
Well, this week we have sports classes.
Right.
So and we did it again last year. So the sports classes are, we have 9.
Yep.
So in no specific order, you have. We have numbers, so you go 1 would be the most impaired, and then 2 would be less impaired, and 3 would be the least impaired.
Got you.
Okay. So in sitting classes, we have 2, sitting 1 and sitting 2.
Yeah.
In standing, we have standing 1, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Visual impairments 1 and 2, and intellectual impairments 1 and 2. And the nice thing about those 9 sports classes is that they can all play the same golf course, they can all do the same thing, they all play in exactly the same way. We will end up with an overall champion, but we'll end up with 9 sports class winners.
That's why I love golf. It's so fantastic that everyone's included and everyone's playing the same sport, same golf course. I think you're doing a tremendous job. And how impressed are you with what's going on in the world of golf for players with disability?
Yeah, I think if you go back to our forefathers in 2000, look, the first disability association was 1932, and that was the Royal Society of One-Armed Golfers. I think it was called the Royal Society, and that was up in Glasgow.
Right.
And it was very unique. It was about one-armed golfers. You had to play with one arm, and that was it.
That
and
was the only
all
category.
The other people were kind of left to one side. Nothing much changed then until the 50s and the 60s. When we get to 2000, it starts to make a little bit more sense. So realistically, if we start thinking about the trajectory of G4D, as we call it simply, it's 25, 30 years old.
Mm.
We think about a game of golf, which depends who you listen to. If you listen to the Scots, it's 500 years. If you listen to the Dutch, it's 700. If you listen to the Chinese, it's 1,000 years old.
Yes.
So I think if we think of it in those terms, we've come an awful long way in that 30 years period. I think we've come an enormous amount of distance in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Because that's where the real progress has been made. And so organisations that perhaps were previously a little bit sat on the fence, not really sure, should we get involved in this, shouldn't we? Now they're sort of beating down the door to say, we need to get involved in this space because we see what the benefit is for the overall sport.
Tony, thanks so much for your time. I've learnt a lot. You can test me later. Great stuff. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's hear now from Kevin Barker, the Director of Golf Development at the RNA.
We try and develop and grow the game of golf around the world. And over time, I think we have invested more into golf for the disabled. And for a long time, we would get approached, and we still do, by organisations looking for a bit of money to run their championship or to do this and to do that. And that's fine. We're happy to help where we possibly can, but we don't have unlimited resources. So with Edgar, I think Edgar have played a huge role over the last 5 to 10 years in making national federations realise that, you know, if you're a golfer, it doesn't matter if you're able-bodied or if you've got a disability, you're a golfer. First and foremost, you're a golfer, and as a national federation, you should be looking after your golfers. I think it's groundbreaking because you've got an organisation like the RNA, which is a global body. We run the Open, we run the AIG Women's Open, and I think we are acknowledging that these players warrant an Open of their own. We're saying you're good enough, and we're recognising that, and I think that's incredibly important for golf. It's incredibly important for the RNA, and I think it helps our ambition, as I say, to make golf open and accessible to all. Why golf? I mean, I personally, I started playing golf when I was very young and played a lot of sports. There are lots of great sports out there. And then, I just love the game. I love the challenge. But I think for anyone, golf is a game that can be played irrespective of sex, gender, your ability, your handicap in terms of your playing ability, your physical ability, whether you're able-bodied or you've got a disability, irrespective of your age. You can play this from age 4 to 94. You can play against the best players in the world because of the handicapping system. There aren't many games that you can do that. I'm not going to play Djokovic in the centre court of Wimbledon, but I could come here to Woburn and I could play against an Ian Poulter or whoever with the handicapping system, and we could have a game, and that makes it special.
So we found out more about the tournament itself, but Joachim Bjorkman, do you feel that disability golf is growing? It's going in the right direction?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything is, it takes time.
Yeah.
So when we are with the DP World Tour and now with the PGA Tour, the last couple of weeks, that's what I dreamt of when I started. So I will try to keep me alive.
Yeah.
To be here a couple of years more, because I had a goal. If we were in the Paralympics 28, I had back in my mind to like resign and say thank you for me.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So I'm feeling that I don't know how long my body can hold, or the head or whatever. So I put a time to 2028 to step away, but now unfortunately the golf in Paralympics was a no-go, so next opportunity is 2032.
You got to keep going.
Yeah
you've got to keep going. So, how is the body anyway?
It's pretty good.
Excellent.
Yeah,
it's good.
So I have lost like 7 or 8 kilos in a couple of months.
Oh wow, what's the secret?
Toshchan.
Toshchan.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Where is he? I want to see him.
Yeah.
I want to get in that gym with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I love the name of this podcast. And it's the reason for this next question. Why golf? Why do you play? Why do you love it? Why do you, or sometimes not love it? Why is it part of your life?
Why golf is to become the best player in the world. That's the why I signed me up in that week. Because I remember straight away many newspaper got me when a golfer like me took Sweden by storm. And I got so many questions about, why do you play golf? Or why are you doing this? It was like, I want to be the best in the world. I mean, and then back then, I was thinking of to like be Tiger, to be better than Tiger. It was that level. Wow. So that's the why.
Joachim, we have some clubhouse curveballs for you. I hope you'd like the catchy title. This is the first one.
Yep.
What is your favorite golf course to travel to in the world and to play?
That's a curveball. I think about Augusta.
Oh,
because
yes.
Of the myth and the mystique and everything.
Have you played Augusta? No. We'd like to play. We can tell everyone. We're available for selection.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is actually a media day the day after the Masters, so I'm sure we can get involved in that in some way.
Where's the media application?
Yeah, exactly. I know. Someone will send it to us. Yeah. Great. Good choice. Favourite hole at Augusta? Or favourite sort of hole
12,
you want to play? Yeah.
The par 3.
Yeah. On in one.
Yeah.
Good. I'll be in the back, in the bushes. When you're packing your bag to get ready for a round of golf, aside from your clubs, what is the one thing you never forget to put in there?
The trigger point ball.
Tell us about it.
It's like a massage ball.
Oh.
It's a hard, so it can...
Oh, it's for your bum. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, they're brilliant, aren't they?
That's the first.
I was lying on a tennis ball this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it releases, doesn't it? Yeah. Good, good. And finally, what is your drink of choice on the 19th hole?
I'll be a little bit grey there, so I go with water.
Water, pure, great.
So
I'll have one of those.
So right now it's like, I've never been a like soda drinker or something else. I always go with water.
And is this Torsten's influence?
No,
it's you.
It's before.
Good.
So I've never been in like soda world with everything with the bubbles. So that's hard, actually.
Well, you make your own bubbles in life, don't you? You don't need bubbles.
Yeah.
Joachim, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for being on Why Golf.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Really wonderful story that will, I'm sure people will be really interested to listen to. Thank you.
Thanks.
This has been Why Golf, presented by Skyscanner. Thank you to all our amazing guests. And please do check us out on Instagram and YouTube. Until next time, goodbye.